Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 20th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Jake Benjamin will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. He's with Louis Dreyfus. In agricultural news, a think tank predicts the U.S. will spend $90 billion on renewable fuels over the next 6 years. Senate Democrats may hold up the appointment of the next U.S. Secretary of Ag in order to ensure the president signs the Farm Bill into law. And speaking to the Farm Bill, Iowa's Tom Harkin says it needs to be completed now. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Illinois Farm Bureau. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat for the nearby at $7.73.5, up 17 and a quarter for the soft red. The July at 687.5, up 8.5 cents, and in between the March contract at 796, 18 cents higher. Corn pit now, December futures 381.25, settlement price up 3.75. March futures up 3.75 as well at 398.25. And the May contract at 408.75, up 4 cents. December futures 424.5, 3.5 higher for the afternoon. January soybeans $10.87 a bushel, 16.5 cents the gain. March futures up 16.25 at $11.35, and the May futures at $11.09, 16.25 higher. Next year's November soybean contract at $10.27.5, an 11-cent gain for the day. December bean meal up $2.30 at $2.90, and January futures at $292.70, up $2. December bean oil $45.72, 92 higher. January futures at $46.22, up 96. December live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange portion of the CME Group, 96.17.5, a dollar higher. February futures at 98.27.5, 87.5 cents higher. November feeder cattle down 19 cents at 108.66. January futures 109.57.5, 75 cents higher. December lean hog futures $2.82.5, the final trade higher at 54.82.5. February futures $63 even, 280 higher, and the April futures at $66.20, up 92.5 cents for the afternoon. Outside markets, where most of the action came from, in the agricultural pits, they're following the crude higher, now trading up $3.36 in the January contract at $98 a barrel, February at $96.18. up $2.60 for the afternoon. The gold is trading the nearby November at $790.30 an ounce. They're up $13.50 an ounce at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gained 66 points at 13,176 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and in the outside markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Shall we start in the outside markets or with the wheat in general?
Well, I think that, we can't shy away from heating oil's all-time highs. I don't think we can shy away from $98.21 crude oil as we speak, and gold being up $25, over $800 in the December gold here, Todd. I think that sort of tells the story that they just couldn't fight that, and along with some other news, why that's what happened over the grains today.
So they all pushed the grains higher. Any good fundamental reasons for those outside markets to move?
Well, you know, we're seeing that China was trying to herd things in a little bit, but along the way, why they were cutting some of their import tariffs to some of their government import agencies, and of course, That means that they can still continue to import at a little lesser price, trying to help lower the food costs and the inflation that's going on over there. We also saw that Oil World said that 07-08 world soybean supply could drop another 15 million metric tons, and that bean crush could increase 13 million metric tons next year because of the biodiesel in Brazil and Argentina and seeing limited oil exports down there. So along with all that, that pretty much told us what was going on today, along with option expiration, Todd.
And tell me about this wheat market for the day, the gain that we had.
Well, you know, as we've got down here, we've hit some technical points, so we've seen some sales here. We're seeing some of the Russia talking about putting some export tariffs on, and the supply is very tight here right now. We're also seeing and talking about some of the drought in the southeast and part of the plains area, where it isn't quite as good that way, but all in all, this was a good technical bounce off some support.
A good technical bounce. Where do we turn the corner, if we do at all, from a move lower to simple consolidation potentially?
You know, I don't know how high we can take the wheat on this. Now, we're not going to go back to the levels where we were before, or at least not in my mind. It can on the board, and I've been wrong with some of my predictions before, but I think that another day like this is probably about all we're going to get out of it, Todd.
How does that all play out into the corn and the soybeans?
Well, the corn and the soybeans, like I say, there you punched up against the contract highs at 1088 there in the Januarys. We're sitting at 1087. And with the crude roaring like it is, with the dollar sliding like it is, it just is not a pretty situation, and it looks like it could continue to build a little bit along with the idea that we're going to look at China trying to build a few more stocks here with the idea that fertilizer costs keep increasing and we're going to have a chance. We're talking, as the informers' numbers of less bean acres than they had in their last report, for looking ahead to the next year and trying to gain on supplies. And I think that along with all that, why we're going to see the beans want to stay active to try to buy that extra 3-4 million acres of bean acres for the coming spring.
Well, how high do you think they need to go beyond where they are in order to pull that off? We're looking at, an outside up day, I suppose, today. Technically, that'll give the technicians a little fuel to move things higher, but how much higher would be?
Todd, we only went through $11 once. That was on the lead month futures. That
yes.
was back in 1973. The market was a lot different then. The dollar was a lot different value. But we have never, since 1973, we have never been above $11 in beans. So, we are in just about very close to uncharted waters here as to know what to look at and what to think about. I think that just because of some of the outside influences and the large fund money and things going on, there's a possibility we're going to probably do that $11 this time. Now, will we go on to 12 or not? I don't know. I would think we would be getting close to the area of where we might, sort of be stabilizing here on the top side.
So in 73, we went to what, 1290 as a high, is that right?
I couldn't say for sure, but that sounds very close.
Yeah,
Todd.
It's something in that range. I've got a couple of different ones. I was thinking it was 1254, but that may be something in that has to do with the corn market, the 54 anyway. But looks like maybe 1290 was the high back in 73. So there's some room to grow in there, but $11 is really hard to push through. I have approached that several times and just not really managed to punch through for any good reason. Is there really any good reason you think at this point that it should go other than the technicians would like it to?
To be very honest, no, I don't think so. I think that, we have supply now. We are going with acres. I think that these are levels that ought to have generated some more acreage in South America, Argentina, Brazil, all that area. I think that we have, with the fertilizer costs going up like they are, a couple of our customers called today, said they'd been into their fertilizer dealers and they were just shocked. Some of my seed corn dealers are telling me that already because of that, they're seeing corn bean numbers being released and buying seed beans in different areas. So I think we're starting to see some of the switch over to bean acres that wasn't here a couple weeks ago when Informa put their numbers up.
Is this primarily a nitrogen problem?
Nitrogen costs, potash costs, 1846-0 costs, all of the fertilizers have just been tremendously high. They're talking about $400 potash here first of the year.
Anything else we should add before I let you go for the day?
I think that's about it for today, Todd.
All right. We thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with meteorologist Ed Kieser to see what he has to say about the agricultural weather forecast across the globe. We do have his forecast for tonight across the two-state region. He says, tonight in northern and west-central parts of Illinois, it'll be cloudy. There'll be a period of rain or two. In northern Indiana and east-central and central Illinois, cloudy, some showers, some isolated thunderstorms too, most numerous after midnight. In central Indiana and the south, mostly cloudy. Some mild air with a chance of a few showers toward daybreak. Lows will range from 35 in far northwestern Illinois to 58 in the south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northern Illinois, cloudy, windy, and cool. Some scattered showers. Elsewhere, cloudy, periods of rain, and some scattered thunderstorms, especially in the south. Dave Dickey's here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, EarthTrack, a think tank that studies and reports on governmental subsidies of all kinds, says the U.S. is on track to spend more than $90 billion to subsidize ethanol and biodiesel production between 2006 and 2012. EarthTrack assumes that current energy subsidy levels will be renewed and the renewable fuels standard remains 7.5 billion gallons. EarthTrack says a new higher RFS could drive energy subsidy spending over $100 billion annually. EarthTrack goes on to say that 79 federal bills dealing with ethanol or biodiesel have been introduced between January and September of this year, and that 49 states have at least one renewable fuels subsidy. 9 states have more than 20 energy subsidies. Meanwhile, yesterday, Florida lawmakers say they are close to approving changes in regulations that will increase the supply of ethanol blended gasoline in the Sunshine State. A key provision would allow marketers to exceed part year evaporation limits with gasoline they blend with ethanol. The nomination of Ed Schaefer for USDA Secretary may become a bargaining chip for the Farm Bill. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says that Senate Democrats may put a hold on Schaefer's appointment until President George Bush gives assurance that he will sign a new Farm Bill into law. Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says producers must have answers now.
We would like to get this farm bill done, and my farmers in Iowa, too, are wondering about next year. We're not much into winter wheat, but we are into spring crops. People are wondering about how their inputs. Do they lay in enough fertilizer? Are they going to put more corn? Are they going to put more beans? Are they going to put in some more hogs or cattle on feed? I mean, these are all decisions based upon what this farm bill is going to look like.
Harkin will chair the Farm Bill Conference Committee. It's expected Harkin will champion his favorite program, the Conservation Security Program. The U.S. yesterday lifted restrictions on some imports of Canadian cattle and beef. The new rule allows import of cattle born on or after March 1st of 1999, as well as meat from animals of any age. Mike Held is with the South Dakota Farm Bureau.
We think that we need to get that border and our beef trade with Canada back to a normal, a business-like situation that's based on science. And that's what those world standards call for, is science-based trade. We have not been doing that the last four and a half years, and we need to get back to that situation.
A South Dakota court has yet to rule on a temporary restraining order that would put the new rule on hold pending a trial on the issue. Future analysts say they expect little effect on U.S. cattle from the opening of the border to Canadian cattle over 30 months of age. USDA is requiring that Tyson Foods stop labeling its products as raised without antibiotics. Tyson Foods has spent tens of millions of dollars since June on an advertising and labeling campaign to distinguish its product from its competitors. USDA says it made a mistake in approving the label. An Asian soybean rust has made its way to Canada for the first time. Yesterday, the Ontario Soybean Growers Association confirmed a finding in a field in Ridgetown, Ontario, about 70 miles east of Detroit. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of our daily ag programming. You can listen to it as an MP3 file directly from the website, or sign up to have it downloaded directly to your computer as a podcast. It's at willag.org. While you're there, make sure you check out a few of the other pages, including the USDA reports page. Have you really ever wondered what those numbers look like and wanted to see them in an easy-to-use form? They're right there at willag.org. Well, up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says it is time for food, family, and football.
As Americans everywhere prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, the topic of conversation sometimes becomes spirited and quite naturally turns to food. What family favorites will be prepared for the annual feast? Who will bring the side dishes, the desserts? Will we eat before or after the football game? The cost of the meal is another topic often brought up for debate. Every November since 1986, the American Farm Bureau Federation has computed a national average cost for 16 food items used to prepare a traditional Thanksgiving meal: turkey, stuffing, sweet potatoes, pumpkin pie, and all the trimmings. Media coverage of the survey results are extensive. Hundreds of stories are written, many with a local angle on prices consumers found at their local grocery stores and the meals they're planning to make. Some stories include responses from consumers to the ASBF average cost, which was $42.26 for a dinner for 10 people this year. Overwhelmingly, stories about the cost of the Thanksgiving dinner are positive, touching on how family and friends gather together for the meal and the abundance and affordability of food enjoyed by most Americans. Even news outlets across the pond are interested in food trends here in America. The BBC News Online posted a story on the foods Americans are likely to prepare for Thanksgiving and what it will cost. Also of note this year, Walmart, the nation's largest grocery chain, piggybacked on Farm Bureau's national survey. The company issued a news release on Farm Bureau's survey results and trumpeted that shoppers could save 10% by buying the ingredients for the meal at its stores. But from time to time, the Thanksgiving survey has been reported on in less than glowing terms by skeptical reporters. It's interesting that many of those stories could best be described by food-related terms or metaphors. For example, Farm Bureau and its economists have been grilled about where the numbers reported in the survey come from, skewered by consistently reporting the cost of the same survey items year after year, and roasted for typically reporting only nominal yearly price increases. Simmer down, naysayers. Enjoy a wholesome home-cooked turkey dinner for just over $4 per person in an amazing deal. Anyway, you slice it. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time now to take our weekly look at the energy markets. Jake Benjamin, energy analyst with Louis Dreyfus in Kansas City, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Jake.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start out by talking a little bit about the ethanol market, and I don't know whether we call it the prompt market or the cash market or both, and they're interchangeable. You tell me.
Typically, when I talk cash, it just means a physical commodity rather than referring to the futures or some other derivative product. But particularly for the front months here in November, we've seen cash markets rally 28 to 30 cents in a number of destination markets, the West Coast, East Coast markets, Northeastern market, Texas, the big population centers. Ethanol is in demand here in the last 30 days.
And why is that the case?
We've seen some increased interest in blending the margin that someone who can yield when they purchase gasoline and ethanol blended at 10% is very compelling.
So it has not much to do with the mandate, but more to do with the ability to make money off of the deal.
The increases that we've seen are in discretionary markets where they're not mandated, but economics are driving the decision.
Tell me, as you look out, do you think this will continue for very long?
Yeah, we quickly approach the theoretical blend wall that people have talked about, where we bump up against physical infrastructure limitations. Do we have enough pumping capacity, storage capacity, trucking capacity to handle all this ethanol in the gasoline, even though economics dictate it should happen? It may not physically be able to.
And so at what point does that happen? Where does the blend wall set, do you believe?
That's the $64,000 question. I believe we're a distance away from that, 6 months maybe. On a gallon basis, we're approaching 8.5-9 billion gallons until you hit physical barriers. That's one man's estimate.
Somehow I believe it's worth a lot more than $64,000. but we'll go with that as the question. But the blend wall out there for just a bit. Are there things that might happen in the meantime that could change the economics? For instance, we're pushing now in the crude oil back up through $98 a barrel.
Yeah, watching it live right here, we're making contract highs as we speak at $98.56 on the January futures. Ouch, that's all I have to say. We're up almost $4 a barrel today. Does that make it more compelling? Yeah, a little bit. Aside from physical hang-ups, we do have some regulatory issues in the southeast where ethanol is more evaporative than regular gasoline. And to make clean air practices, the states will limit how much ethanol can come in to the gasoline pool. And the current angle is to try and repeal some of those limits in Florida, Georgia, and Carolinas.
Do you think it would be possible for the crude oil futures to drop dramatically anytime in the future? We talked with Glenn Ring over the weekend on Commodity Week, and he laid out a scenario that wasn't particularly pretty, although he didn't give it a great chance of happening.
Yeah, he made reference to something in the 50s, I believe.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that bearish. I definitely feel it's overvalued here. I think we stopped trading fundamentals, $10 or $15 ago, and there's a lot of hype in the market right now. We are coming into a heating oil season, though, and demand in not necessarily the gasoline pool, but the home heating pool. The forecast for tomorrow's EIA stocks report, our estimate is that crude oil stocks will build, hopefully alleviating some of this upward movement that we've seen.
What do you think could be changed in the infrastructure easily enough that would change where the blend wall might be?
Ethanol storage capacity. Transitioning tanks that have been used for gasoline into ethanol is a relatively easy operation. Just physically moving it from gasoline to ethanol requires emptying out the tank and really just putting the ethanol in it. You may have some older facilities where they have to replace some pump seals and such, but tanks that are underutilized can quickly be converted for ethanol storage.
That sounds like an easy way to pump the distribution up and make storage available all across the nation.
Yes.
And how much capacity do you think might be available to do that? I
think it varies by region. I think there's some low-hanging fruit, so to speak, in the southeast where there's a very compelling, like I said, this blending component is very compelling, and I think that'll be the first place you see a significant move.
We'll watch for it. Thanks much.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Cenk Benjamin is with Louis Dreyfus, where he analyzes the energies for them. We appreciate him being along with us on Tuesdays, our weekly look at what's been happening in the energy market. Cenk is one of several analysts that we take a look at those markets at each and every Tuesday. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, will be along. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. There will apparently be no primary in Illinois' 104th State Representative District. Danville City Councilman Terry Baldwin says health concerns are forcing him to drop out of a Republican primary race against the city's mayor, Scott Eisenhower. Baldwin told a local newspaper he was recently treated in an emergency room for high blood pressure related to a liver transplant to correct a rare genetic condition. Baldwin's challenger, Eisenhower, had won the endorsement of retiring State Representative Bill Black. A Champaign County board member is stepping down because of a change in employment. Republican Scott Tapley will leave after a 13-year career as one of the board's most high-profile conservative members. Tapley says on a political blog he's moving to take an investment job in Indiana. He says he'll remain active in a lawsuit that he and other Southwest Champaign residents filed against the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District over annexation. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley is weighing in on Governor Blagojevich's call for another special session so lawmakers can bail out struggling mass transit agencies. Daley says there have been so many special sessions that, in his words, you hope that one takes. The governor wants lawmakers back in Springfield next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, to break the logjam before service cuts and fare increases happen. One option is to redirect state sales tax revenue on gasoline purchases in Cook and the Collier counties to mass transit. Daley says the problem then is how to replace that money in the state budget. Another plan is a regional sales tax increase. Daley says elected leaders need to do heavy lifting. The city council recently backed Daley's tax and fee increases. A suspect is in custody charged in connection with two attacks on women in the University of Illinois campus Halloween night. A police officer on the campus arrested Fernando Rizzo Perez yesterday after recognizing his face. The man is accused of aggravated battery in the incidents, one of which happened just off the U of I quad. The largest clinic in Champaign-Urbana is getting criticism for turning away or limiting services to uninsured patients. The head of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumer says Carl Clinic Association has also denied prenatal services to pregnant women with Medicaid, though Carl says it's expanding its access to Medicaid patients. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined now by Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. He's filling in for our regular Tuesday analyst, Don Day. Thanks for doing that today, Ed. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Don, a little under the weather, wrote us an email note because he really couldn't call us. He has laryngitis today.
Well, that's not good for the radio.
Well, not good for the radio. And well, I guess I may give him an extra day off as he heads into Thanksgiving. Speaking of that, what's our weather look like for the Midwest?
Well, we do have a change on the way. It's very mild right now. I think it's about 68 degrees on Friends Plaza. It's, and our record high for this date is 72, so we will come just short of the record high. Enjoy this warm weather. We may not hit 60, the upper 60s to around 70 again the rest of this year. Colder air is headed this way, and the cold front will come through early tomorrow morning, and then we'll just get into a cold rain with a north wind tomorrow. On the back edge of it, some snow is possible late tomorrow night into Thursday morning, but it's not expected to stick too much. The roads are still going to be warm enough, so that's not a big problem. But we are going to go into some wet weather here starting tonight and continuing through tomorrow and tomorrow night. Periods of rain. That'll be followed by dry and cold weather on Friday and Saturday, and then a wet weather system will pass by just to our south and east. We'll be on the northwest fringe of that, so we'll get maybe some showers Sunday and early Monday, rain showers, but wet weather for the delta and southeast, and some of that area could use some rain.
Tell me a little bit more, because there will be a lot of people traveling, and maybe we should talk about the east coast and the west coast. For those who have flights, what's that going to look like?
Well, there's some snow in New England right now, but that should be moving on out of there. I think for flights, one area of trouble is O'Hare Airport today. There's some fog there today and drizzle, and tomorrow there'll be wind and rain. So there could be some flight delays with all of this. And then on the tail end of the weekend, that wet weather system late Sunday into Monday will be moving up the East Coast, and that could affect that area.
Did you bone up on the rest of the weather around the globe for me before you took off? Actually, you stayed in for the day. So.
Yeah, I've been here today. Well, you know, with South America, we're looking at a couple of things. One, a weather system will probably bring some rain to Argentina, southern Argentina, especially dry right now in the next week. But the coverage is not going to be complete, and after that it may turn dry. So that's an area of concern looking out over the next couple of weeks. Northeastern Brazil has been very, very dry around Bahia, northern Minas Gerais, and northeastern Goiás. It looks like some rain will be coming in there next week. So for the producers there, some beneficial rain. So after next week, I think the area of most concern is going to be Argentina.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, let's say happy Thanksgiving to everybody and safe travels.
You too. Thanks much. That's Ed Keezer. He's the chief meteorologist here at WILL, filling in this afternoon for Don Day, who's away. Well, not away, has laryngitis for the day. And our much thanks to Ed Keezer, who's been around for a long portion of the day. He had the early shift at WILL, and it appears he's working a good deal of the late afternoon shift today, too. So we appreciate him sticking around. That is today's Closing Mark Report. Thanks much for being with us today. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49. It'll be our first look at the markets. Dave Dickey will join you. He's the director of Ag Programming. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. Wishing you a good afternoon.